ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hey, I'm Dominique Bayens. Just ahead of politics now, I want to tell you about my new podcast, Expanse, The Nanup Four. 2 decades after 4 people disappeared in WA, those left behind are still asking, was it a vanishing act or murder?
I'm starting to think this is not going to end well.
After their disappearance, a complex picture of deceit, control and cults came to light. Search Expanse on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
A grim and introverted leader and a lacklustre campaign. That's just some of the key takeaways from the Liberals' 2025 election review. And while the party executive tried to bury the report, Anthony Albanese tabled all 64 pages in question time in what Andrew Hastie called a boss move. The review slams a notable absence of reflection from key figures involved in the campaign. So how did the Liberals move forward? Welcome to Politics Now. Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis.
And I'm David Spears.
It's kind of very confusing, David, because you're in the studio in Melbourne and I'm in your studio in Parliament House, which is kind of a bit my studio because I spent a lot of time here and we're together but far away.
I like your Melbourne digs here, Pika. It's very dark
It's very dark and moody. It actually makes me very calm, that room. So it brings out the best in me, I reckon. So Politics Now listeners get the best of me in there because I feel centred. Less zen here in Parliament House, I won't lie, because it's chaos.
There's a lot going on.
A lot. Okay, so there's been a lot of developments in the Middle East conflict, including Australians making their way home or trying to make their way home and how to deal with all of that. But let's start with the Liberal Party's election review. Now, I reported a story for the ABC that Peter Dutton had threatened defamation action, which is why it got suppressed. Then they were trying to change the thing. They did. However, Angus Taylor, once he was elected, said, we're still not going to release this thing. And lo and behold, as the day follows the night, it got leaked, so much so that the ALP got access to it and thought, why don't we table it in the parliament, which means we all have access to it now. David, is that pretty much what happened?
Yeah, and look, it was a cheeky move from the Prime Minister and Andrew Hastie on Radio National this morning, kind of giving a hat tip to the PM, a boss move. He acknowledged this was, somewhat cheeky, but a smart tactical move for Anthony Albanese. You can't get sued for tabling this report in Parliament.
Oh, no.
Parliamentary privilege there, if Peter Dutton still has worries about this. Yeah, it had already been leaked to journalists and was circulating, but in its full glory, now tabled in the Parliament for all to see. PK.
Full glory. So there's different versions of the thing. And in fact, what I just quoted at the beginning of the pod about a grim and introverted leader didn't actually make it in eventually. Either way, there's a lot of negative stuff in it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff we already knew, PK. I mean, you were there on election.
We talked about it 100,000
times. On election night, even before election night, during the campaign, we were identifying the sort of mistakes that this review, digs up for us once more. We knew things like opposing tax cuts, was a bad idea. We knew the work from home policy. I mean, they tried to fix that during the campaign after it went down like a lead balloon. So a lot of these aren't surprising. Some of those reflections on Peter Dutton, though, are pretty harsh for a campaign review, aren't they? The other one that I was talking to people in the federal executive who had decided to suppress this before Insiders on Sunday, and the line about Peter Dutton being unattractive to women was the one that they really had a problem with. They felt this sort of, inferred a physical appearance problem and that was not only disrespectful to Dutton, but disrespectful to female voters, right? That they're...
Yeah, like we have to think
exactly
that the leader as a gender is so hot right now. Like, what?
I mean,
yuck.
Surely they could have worded that a little better in the review.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
Does the report, does the report tell you, do you think, anything that you didn't know already?
Absolutely not. No. However, that's not the point. The point is, if it's an official review that's spoken to a lot of people and has come to conclusions like, we've got a problem with multicultural voters, we have too many internal errors that we haven't, dealt with. These are, sure, the media can interview lots of people.
One thing for us to say it, or commentators to say it. It's another thing.
To actually do it methodically and publish it in a document, which is what Prue Goward and Nick Minchin did, I think is different because it's more specific and they did sit down with everyone.
Yeah, exactly. Right? It's got a more formal gravitas to it than anything a commentator might say. Tell you what I'm waiting to see, and this has kind of been sitting under the radar a bit. Remember there was another review that Susan Lee, after the election, commissioned, not just the Nick Minchin Prue Goward review. James McGrath, currently an LNP senator, was given the task of doing a structural review, a longer-term view on their last two election defeats, 22-25, both disastrous, but look to, you know, this existential problem, as Susan Lee framed it, that, you know, that the party might be on track to being wiped out. So this review is still underway. I checked in with James McGrath. It's expected to come later this year, but that's looking more at how the party's structured between its state divisions, its federated structure, the membership problems it's got with, you know, declining membership and how to make it a more attractive thing to be a part of, operational reform, candidate recruitment, get more women pre-selected, all of these sort of things. I think this could have more substance to it for the party.
I think that is fundamental for the party. I mean, the party's central problem, before we move on, because, you know, it's all out there now, there's so much in the review, but I think the lack of reflection is the strongest thing. It really is, because, here you have being thumped again, second consecutive election, and a lack of reflection is a very bad sign, right? It is a very bad sign.
Yeah, so the reviews basically said that the senior decision makers in all their submissions, right, they got heaps of submissions, aren't really saying, oh, here's what I got wrong. They're saying, here's what someone else got wrong. I mean, even Peter Dutton in his comments after all of this was, you know, cheekily tabled by the PM has said, well, the review, in my view, didn't give enough emphasis to the poor polling that we had from Freshwater. You know, there's polling that suggested we're going to win all these seats. We put our resources in there. That was a stupid thing to do. The polling was the problem. I mean, it just sort of highlights that, look, to be fair, Peter Dutton does accept his share of responsibility, but in terms of specific failures by individuals, yeah, it sounds like the review isn't convinced there's been enough of that.
No, and I can't see the pathway. So they tried to suppress it. Now it's out there, a version of it anyway.
Yeah.
I don't see the pathway to changing. In fact, there's been a doubling down on some of the strategies that this review has found to have been ineffective. So, yeah, I don't see, back to your James McGrath point, I mean, some of the changes that party has to make itself relevant to modern Australia is huge. Its membership base is so old and so white and so male.
Yep.
Like, it needs to change to reflect the country, and it doesn't appear to be about to do
that. No, and so that's the more structural, strategic change for the party that they need to tackle that James McGrath is looking at. I guess this is looking at the tactics of, you know, an individual election campaign and where they got the priorities wrong, which segue alert PK. Perhaps we should just reflect on, we're halfway through this parliamentary sitting week, first sitting week for Angus Taylor as opposition leader. You know, he made the big deal when he replaced Susan Lee. We've got to change or die. What have you seen from his tactics so far this week? I know you and Raf reflected on this yesterday on the pod.
I didn't mince my words.
No, and then I think you recorded that probably before yesterday's question time. We've seen, I suspect it changes today and they do start talking about the economy because we've got some GDP figures. But I don't know, the first 2 days of Parliament, all about those so-called ISIS brides.
And when you ask them, because I've made it a point of asking why this? It's not the main issue that Australians are raising. Why this? In all my interviews with coalition people, their argument is, remember those two central points that Angus Taylor made his thing when he got elected, which is our way of life, you know, our standard of living, those two things, right? Now, our way of life is about values, culture, immigration, culture war-ish things. And they all keep saying that's what we decided to focus on this week, the national security way of life stuff. And we'll get to the other stuff later. It still beggars belief, though, that when the economy is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 on people's things that they're worried about list, that you would talk about ISIS brides, which most people would not even have woken up and thought about truthfully, right? Like, just doesn't mean that they don't think it's an issue if you ask them, probe them, but they're not thinking about it top of mind. They're thinking about their bills. Interest rates are about to go up. Oh no, are there going to be budget cuts? Oh no, we're going to have petrol prices go up because there's this war in the Middle East. Oh dear. That's what people are thinking about nonstop, you know, because there are queues for petrol, for crying out loud. That's what's worrying worrying people, as it should. That is the front of mind thing for any family. And so that's why it's been odd. And it's been so weird. The weirdest thing for me to watch is the way the Prime Minister is openly mocking them for not asking any questions about the economy. He's basically putting on the table that he acknowledges that there's a cost of living crisis and he should be in trouble over it, and he's not. Imagine, just think about that. Being able to stand up as a Prime Minister in Question Time, mock the other side for not actually taking you on your biggest vulnerability. Like, he's like saying, I'm yeah, stuffed,
come on,
guys,
come
and you're
on.
Not even asking questions on
I
it.
Think, you know, they're not even getting the questions from the opposition, but relishing ripping into Tim Wilson's record, in particular on various comments that he's made over the years on superannuation and Medicare and so on. They're relishing the opportunity to get into Angus Taylor because they just have a bank of gear ready to roll once he goes to the economy. But he will today. This morning, Angus Taylor, Tim Wilson, Jane Hume were out at a local IGA in Canberra, talk about cost of living, the price of groceries, how it's hurting small business, hurting families, and so on. And yeah, they've got plenty to work with here because inflation is still a problem that's hurting, and interest rates have already gone up, may well go up again. And we've just had the economic data for the final 3 months of last year, the December quarter. National accounts have just dropped while you were talking there, PK. It's come in the strongest in 3 years, according to the Treasurer. So 0.8% growth for the quarter, 2.6% annually. But anyway, there'll be focus on that in Parliament this afternoon, you can be sure. But I just wanted to also bring to everyone's attention something that I expect Jim Chalmers will go after this afternoon in Question Time, PK. And that's some comments from Tim Wilson on Sky News this morning, where he went in pretty hard about fuel excise. He told Sky that every time the price of petrol goes up, Jim Chalmers collects more tax revenue. He's going to get a massive windfall from the increase in the price of petrol due to what's happening in the Middle East. It's actually not how fuel excise works. It's what they call volumetric. So it's charged at just over 52 cents a litre, regardless of what the price of petrol is. But it wasn't just a throwaway comment. He spent, you know, the entire interview going on about how the rising price of petrol lines Jim Chalmers' pockets. I'm sure the Treasurer will have a thing or two to say about that. Whoopsie, this afternoon.
He must be dancing. Remember when famously Joe Hockey danced in his office after the 2014 budget? Do you remember that?
Yes.
So I wonder what song. I'll text him. He likes bad 90s music. We are pretty much the same age and, you know, we like the same stuff from the bad 90s. There must be.
Is there bad 90s music?
I reckon there's some bad 90s going on and he's having a dance because what a gift. What a gift to a treasurer who has never been under the pump more than this guy, right? His fifth budget about to be delivered, an economy in genuine trouble, interest rates about to go up again, people red hot with rage. Look at the numbers for One Nation in the polling. That's not just about race, my friends. People think it is. It is economic grievance and crankiness. And he's got the new shadow treasurer stuffing something like that up. Honestly, there's no good enough 90s song for this, right? And so, seriously, when I saw this, I couldn't believe it.
Angus Taylor was asked about it this
what
morning
happened?
When
yeah.
they well did this doorstop. Because, you know, Tim Wilson seemed to be suggesting this morning the Treasurer should be thinking about maybe a fuel excise reduction while prices are spiking and suggesting that, you know, as they get higher, he's getting more. Angus Taylor was asked and did a terrific sidestep, just avoided the whole thing. He started talking about, look, inflation is hurting people, whether it's at the petrol pump or their house price or their groceries, and gave it a very wide berth.
Look, I will say though, I think generally Tim Wilson's a sharp kind of operator broadly, but this maybe is some evidence. I've had other very senior people in the gallery say this to me actually, say, look, you know, if you look at his track record, he does stuff up a bit. I think he's matured a lot, like from losing his seat. I think there's been a lot of maturity. Labor has been going hard on him, if you look on his past record. He said some silly things. He has. On women, for instance, they have the children, you know, that he said on Q&A many, many years ago when he was not even in the parliament. But it was a very silly thing to say about women.
There's a lot of material over the years because Tim Wilson is someone who is, you know, never backward in coming forward, has always engaged with the media a lot, has said stuff, whether it's on superannuation, Medicare, interest rates, you name it, and now fuel excise. I think it was Nikki Savva who said that he, you know, when he was appointed to what is one of the most senior roles in the opposition, he's a high-risk, high-reward option. Maybe that's what we're seeing a bit of today, the risky side of Tim Wilson.
How should he deal with it? Should he just come out and say, okay, stuffed up?
Probably.
Yeah, I wonder if
he will?
We're recording this. I think I just, you know, if he's listening, I mean, that's what I would do.
Yeah, yeah. All I know is that petrol prices are hurting and my focus is on reducing the pain on blah, blah, blah.
Anyway, back to the economy. The economy, stupid, is all that really matters, I still think, which is why it's been unusual. And let's see in question time whether that then becomes the focus. It'll be a bit tricky now with this mistake. But all of it is overshadowed, of course, by the war in the Middle East and what that does to the inflation problem in this country, what it does to fuel prices. Like that's...
Yeah, so look, the opposition's been concerned all week, really, since this began, that this would become an excuse for the government to blame away its inflation problems and point to what's happening in the Middle East as the reason why interest rates are going up and why inflation's a problem. I was talking to one of the Liberals yesterday who said, you know, remember Jim Chalmers himself when inflation spiked after the Russia invaded Ukraine. Jim Chalmers, as the shadow treasurer, was quite dismissive of trying to blame international events for the inflation problem. You heard Angus Taylor use a line this morning that I think we'll hear more of. He said, inflation doesn't come from Iran, inflation comes from Canberra. So the opposition doesn't want to let Jim Chalmers blame what's happening in the Middle East. Now, inflation clearly has been a problem before bombs started dropping on Tehran and other Iranian cities, but you can't suggest it doesn't add to the problem. Clearly it does. And when oil prices spike, that has such a ripple effect across the economy that it's a factor. It's just a fact.
Just a fact, exactly. Okay, the other thing that's happening, which I just want to get touched before we say goodbye today, is the Canadian Prime Minister, Mark Carney, in Australia. So he's expected to speak at the Lowy Institute tonight, which is obviously a really, you know, big deal. And he's a significant figure, I think, in that sort of middle power, middle economy world. He addresses the parliament tomorrow, and that's pretty significant, being invited to do that.
Yep.
David, why does it matter? It's just the Canadian Prime Minister. I'm just going to be a bit of a smart ass here. Like, why do we care?
Look, a few things. He is leading the sort of middle power approach to dealing with this new world order that we're in. Mark Carney gave what became a viral speech to the Davos World Economic Forum back in late January, in which he really called out what's happened. The old order is not coming back, he said. We need to end this pleasant fiction, and it's the beginning of a harsh reality where geopolitics, the large main power geopolitics, is submitted to no limits, no constraints. He talked about middle powers like Canada having to work together more, but ending this fiction, really, that there is still a rules-based global order. Now, that was a really powerful, powerful speech, and I think it has had an influence on Anthony Albanese and other middle power leaders as well. I think what we've seen this week with what's happened, what Trump and what Israel have done in Iran, has been so interesting to see how Australia and how far Australia has shifted. Only 6 months ago, Anthony Albanese was delivering a speech at the UN General Assembly where he was defending the rules-based order. He said, and I quote, "If we allow any nation to imagine itself outside the rules or above them, then the sovereignty of every nation is eroded." He talked about, you know, not resigning ourselves to the idea that war is inevitable or relegating ourselves to the status of disinterested bystanders. If our only response to every crisis is to insist there is nothing we can do, then we risk being trusted with nothing. Now, that's not to say that there's any love for the Iranian regime at all. The Albanese government's been very clear, listing all of the sins of the Iranian regime, whether it's its nuclear program, whether it's support for terrorist proxies, whether it's what it's done here in Australia with the anti-Semitic attacks. But this question of, is there a legal basis for what US and Israel have done here? We are seeing Australia sidestep this, saying, look, that's really for the US and Israel to explain. In other words, they can't tell us that this has any international legal grounding. Look, it's been the same response from Mark Carney. To me, this looks like these two countries, Australia and Canada, are trying to grapple with and work a way through this new, I guess, era that we are in. And Andrew Hastie of it was really interesting on this morning as well. He's kind of leading the Liberal position, I think, in many ways in his commentary on this week. You know, he has said, we are in a new stage of history. You know, that old construct is defunct. Mm-hmm. So at a bipartisan level here in Australia, I think we are now seeing a shift. What's happened in Iran sort of confirms this shift where we're no longer arguing so vehemently for the global rules-based order. Do you agree?
I think we are in both dangerous territory here. When you referred to the way the government answers the question on the Iran action, I thought, you know, you nailed it. But it strikes me as really weird that they back it. They say they believe in the international rules-based order still, but then they say it's not for us to explain if it's legal. How do you back something? I know it's not your action. I respect that. But you are actively backing it. You're not hedging, but you are not sure if it's legal. But you believe in legal action. That is a contradiction there. You say that Andrew Hastie is leading the way. I think you're right that what he's doing is he was kind of criticised a bit by Labor, but I, as far as I can see, he's calling a spade, right?
Like, yeah, I think so too. I think, you know, he's absolutely backing in what Mark Carney has said in the Davos speech. He's saying that was a powerful statement and he's absolutely right and this is the reality.
And it doesn't mean you don't believe in the rules-based order. That's the misunderstanding. You can believe in something but believe that it's also over. What I mean by that is, yes, that architecture made sense. It would be great but if we could do that, but that's
but
not,
it's
not happening,
happening
right
it's
now.
Not happening.
So what are we going to deal with, the new reality we're in?
But we've also reached the point where there's an unwillingness to criticise the big powers breaking that. I mean, sure, as I say, again, no one's saying that the Iranian regime, you know, wasn't a terrible regime or isn't a terrible regime. But to quote the Prime Minister 6 months ago at the UN, if we allow any nation to imagine itself outside the rules or above them, then the sovereignty of every nation is eroded.
Let's hear what Mark Carney has to say in the Parliament. I think it will be broadly, given the sort of response we've seen from even Andrew Hastie, well received in a bipartisan way, which will be, I think, positive. And it'll be interesting to see how he frames it and then the response we see after that speech is delivered. That's it for Politics Now for today. David, always great to be with you.
Thanks, PK.
Fran and I will be joined by Cameron Stewart, who is Chief International Correspondent for The Australian, on The Party Room tomorrow. And questions, of course, we always like to do a little special edition of your questions. We're making a bit of a thing of that. Send them to thepartyroom@abc.net.au and we will try to answer them. Bye, David.
See ya.